Stephen Kinzer. He's also an award-winning foreign correspondent, and he's written a book called Poisoner in Chief, Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control. Stephen, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
So when did you first discover what MK Ultra was, or even hear that phrase to start on this book journey?
Some years ago, I wrote a book in which I told a story that I had read in various other manuscripts about how a CIA officer carried a poison kit from Washington to Africa intended to kill the Prime Minister of the Congo, Patrice Lumumba, in 1960. This started me thinking, so did the CIA have a guy who made poisons? They must have. And sure enough, I found out that this chief chemist of the CIA, Sidney Gottlieb, was the poisoner in chief. He's the guy that made all the poisons to kill Castro and everybody else we wanted to get rid of. But then, as I began researching his life, I discovered that making poisons to kill foreign leaders was just a sidelight for him. He actually was the director of this highly secret MK Ultra project, which was the CIA's effort to find a way to control people's minds. And in the course of that project, he carried out all sorts of extreme experiments and was involved in bringing LSD to the United States. I think I got to discover maybe the most powerful unknown American of the 20th century. This guy was totally invisible, but yet he conducted these wild experiments on human beings on three continents and essentially had a license to kill issued by the U.S. government.
Stephen, how far up the chain of command does this go? Obviously, other people had to know what he was up to.
That's true, but you know, the people above him at the CIA who had an idea of what he was doing didn't want to hear the details. It's kind of a piece of not just CIA culture, but maybe the culture of all secret espionage services. You don't want to know what other people are doing because then you're implicated in a way. So ignorance is an asset. I think that Alan Dulles, the director of the CIA, had a pretty good idea that he was carrying out some terrible experiments, and that's why he didn't want to know the details. President Eisenhower probably had some idea of what was happening, but also didn't want to know. So Gottlieb was actually pretty much unsupervised as he carried out this worldwide project.
Was he alone in this? It's hard to do experiments by yourself, I would think.
On the contrary. So he had a group of chemists working at the CIA with a small group of Army chemists, and they worked out of a military base in Maryland, Fort Detrick. That's where they compounded all their poison. And in fact, at one point along the way in 1953, one of the chemists, a guy named Frank Olson, became disillusioned with what he was doing. He apparently had seen people being tortured and dying after being given poison compounds that he himself had made. And he complained about this and said he was going to quit the CIA. And then one night in November in 1953, Frank Olson went out the 13th floor window of his hotel room in New York City. It was originally described as a suicide, but his family believes that Gottlieb and the others who ran MK Ultra were so worried about the possibility that these deep secrets could leak out that they helped him out the window.
Talking this morning with author Stephen Kinzer, the book is called Poisoner in Chief, Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control. Before we get to the mind control part, how did you find this research if it's been buried and even there's a point, I guess, where they were going to have it destroyed or not be found? Where did you find it? Do I do a Google search and start from there? What happens?
It's a little more complicated than Google search. You're right. When Sidney Gottlieb left the CIA, he and his essentially enabler, Richard Helms, who was then the CIA director, decided they would destroy all the records of MKUltra so nobody would know what they did. Now, certain records escaped detection. We were able to find out that, for example, all the expense account reports for MKUltra were in another depot. So those provide a lot of information. And I've spent a couple of years now trying to put together everything that's out there, even traveling to Europe to find the secret safe houses that Gottlieb used and trying to interview everybody, including the girlfriend of one of his sons who, at the age of 16, was brought into the house. And the son showed her how Gottlieb had a bookcase that opened up, and when you pressed a button, you'd find all these guns behind his bookshelf. And she speculated in my interview with her that maybe people that he had experimented on or people he had tried to kill had figured out who he was, and somebody might try to come and get him. And that's why he kept an array of guns in his house, even though he was this kind of quiet, unknown CIA chemist.
See, leave it to a kid to try to impress a girl by giving away big secrets. That's what happens usually.
It works very well. I mean, I think we both had experience with that.
Let's talk about mind control. How does this sort of relate to mind control?
So the CIA had this idea that communists had mastered the techniques of mind control to make people do things they didn't want to do, to make them tell the truth, to be able to be programmed to go out and kill someone and then forget you had done it. Now, this turned out to be a mistake. Actually, nobody had ever discovered those techniques. But the CIA was panicked by this in the early Cold War, in the late 40s and early 50s. And that's why they set up this project, MKUltra, to try to find out if there was a drug or some other technique that would allow the CIA to take control of people's minds. So Sidney Gottlieb was this young chemist that they hired to run this search. And he concluded that if you wanted to find a way to insert a new mind into somebody's brain, the first thing you had to do was find a way to destroy the mind that was already in there. And he spent years destroying people's minds in kinds of experiments in which he would feed them massive overdoses of drugs and electroshock them and expose them to all sorts of extremes of noise and temperature and sensory deprivation. In the end, after 10 years of doing this, he concluded that, yes, it is possible to destroy somebody's mind, and he did destroy quite a few, but it's not possible to insert a new mind into the void and make a person become a kind of a programmed zombie. That was just a myth. So after 10 years of doing this, Gottlieb had to admit that his whole project had been a failure.
You should be watching the current episodes of General Hospital. They'll disprove what you just told me. Anyway, I wanted to know a little bit, who are these people who are the subjects? Where did they get these people?
Very interesting question. So there were two groups. Inside the United States, Gottlieb favored people that were in prison. He made deals with a lot of prison doctors and prison wardens. He had a guy in Kentucky, for example, a prison doctor, who agreed to feed double, triple, and quadruple doses of LSD to seven inmates for 77 straight days to see if this could destroy someone's mind. And guess what? Yeah, it does. Abroad, he had even more intense experiments that led to deaths. And there, the people that he used were what they charmingly called expendables. So these were people that were either suspected enemy agents or refugees who turned up, whose background was unclear, didn't have anybody that would inquire after them. In East Asia, they used captured North Korean soldiers. So these people fell into a web and were used as human guinea pigs, and some of them didn't survive. Yet Gottlieb did all of this in total secrecy. So, in fact, my book is essentially a biography of a person who didn't exist, a guy who wasn't there, and that makes it quite a challenge to write.
Stephen, is there any evidence that something like this is going on now, of course, with different people and maybe variations of it?
I don't see real evidence of it, but nobody saw any evidence of this while it was going on. I have to tell you that this book really shocked me. This is my 10th book, and this is the first time I've been shocked by something I discovered. And one of the things that this kind of a story does make you think about is what you brought up. If a person like this could have operated with so much authority across half the world and the authority to kill people if he wanted to, how do we know that this isn't still happening? What does it tell us about the secret world that functions behind the facade of public politics and public diplomacy that we see? It's very disconcerting because it took all these decades for the story of MKUltra and Gottlieb to come out, and makes me wonder if there won't be some guy like me 50 years from now writing about something that's going on as we speak that we know nothing about.
It's a hard thing to crack. If you don't know that it exists, how do you know what you're looking for in the current time until something in the future for that? The book is Poisoner in Chief, Sidney Gottlieb and the CIA Search for Mind Control. Our guest this morning, Stephen Kinzer. Stephen, we appreciate your time and enlightening us on this unknown story until now. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Stephen Kinzer, again, award-winning foreign correspondent. 9 books. This is his latest one, Poisoner in Chief.